She wasn't happy.
Sure.
And I get it, because they did deserve more time.
Yes.
But I think it was the right decision. The judge and the prosecutor, Jenna McNeil, did a great job of explaining the process and a potential outcome, and reminded her of her original conversation with me. It's like, I just want answers. I don't want their life ruined.
Warning. The podcast you're about to listen to may contain graphic descriptions of violent assaults, murder, and adult language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Murder Police Podcast, The Murder of Charlie Sowers, Part 3.
Did, but we can't play it for you guys.
Well, and the inference will be because you're stupid.
Yes, I mean, absolutely.
Especially in today's climate.
Yeah.
Is that, well, that's simple, you know. So
yeah.
Having had at least one, I've had more, but I had a big one time where that was the case, is that the hard thing for the jury, too, is that if they're linear thinkers, is they've got to know.
Yeah.
And mine was Lynetta White. And I remember talking to a reporter who covered the trial. And we were at a gym one day, and he said, you know, if it was me, I would have had to known who had the hammer in their hand, because it was that. And Jonathan Goforth had thrown in the nefarious black guy that never was there. He threw another guy in the mix that never existed. But that's hard for a jury.
It really is hard
when you're doing that, because when you're testifying, those are the nuances people will never understand, probably, when you have to redact it and act like that other person doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And you'll look stupid in the end.
You really do.
Yeah.
Because, like, you arrested on that statement? And it's like, well, you didn't hear 35% of it.
Yeah.
You
That's
know?
Why, you know, a lot of people don't like plea bargains, but a lot of times you take the plea on who you feel is the less culpable. And that's tricky, too.
Yep.
Because we've put people, all of us have put people in prison before that maybe didn't even pull the trigger, but you have to make a decision on fish or cut bait. Because the power of that statement, even though they're going to attack it, might get over those humps with you.
Yeah.
What a difficult thing for a jury to put together.
It really is. And again, those are nightmares. And you know, going into it, when you make the arrest, you're just like, I can imagine this thing 3 years down the road, the interview being cut to shreds, you know, being redacted. And what are we going to be left with? And it was looking to be a nightmare. But on their end, too, they both knew that they put themselves there and one of them was responsible. And you can roll the dice and be like, a jury could be like, well, we can't decide, so you can go free. Or they can be like, both y'all were responsible, so 25 to life for both of you. So there's a gamble on both sides. And this one, again, it was Charlie's daughter. She was wonderful. When I explained to her that I was opening it up, she's like, I honestly believe that neither one of them went there to kill him. They went to steal his money. He caught them. He fought them, and it went too far. And she's like, they're young enough people. I don't want to see their entire lives ruined for this. So that was huge for us in, like, plea bargaining.
I was going to say that when you'd mentioned the daughter is how she responded to complicity. You know, because the one thing everybody wants is full-on murder.
Yeah.
And when you start talking about manslaughter and reckless and wantons and all the different mindsets and stuff, people start getting kind of shaky because, what do you mean reckless homicide?
Yeah.
And the law dictates that. So she, I guess, was okay with the idea to use complicity.
She was. And I talked to her, too, in that first meeting. I was like, listen, so much time's gone by. Some witnesses have died. Like, I think I can show probable cause that they did it. Convicting them is a whole different story. And she was, but at least I'll have peace to know who did. I was like, you think you know peace until they walk out of a courtroom on an acquittal.
Yes.
There's no worse feeling. I was like, so there will be the possibility of pleas for manslaughter.
Sure.
And I went ahead and told her that, because I knew if it played out with the pointing the fingers at each other, that was going to be a real possibility. And sure enough, it was. So we start negotiating, and had you ever gone through mediation on a case, a trial?
No.
It's fairly new, and I think it got brought up with COVID. They were trying to speed up, you know, because they were getting so far behind in the court dockets. And it's a really interesting process. You've got a retired judge that comes in. The defendants are there. The prosecutors, me, and the family are in the courtroom, and that's it. The judge, the mediator, comes up and basically explains what's going to happen. And we had a retired judge, Judge Adams from Madison County. She was fantastic. Because it would take a certain personality to do mediation. You've got to be able to really relate, because at that point, she separated the defense and their attorneys would go into a room, and we stayed in the courtroom, and she would come out, and basically me or the prosecutor would give a synopsis of the case. And obviously she'd read through the case file and such, and she would talk to the family. It's like, you know, did some really good work here, but you know, there, you all have some obstacles. And luckily I'd told these to Sharon beforehand. So when she get a little, it's like, well, I just don't think, it's like, Sharon, I told you that this was going to be a real possibility. You know, you wanted to find out who did it, and we did that. And you didn't want their entire lives ruined. Okay. And that's why we're here right now, because we could go to trial and we could get 30 years, or we could go and they could walk out. I was like, so this is a negotiation that happens on every murder case. Sometimes they go to trial, but a lot of them plead out. And it really just depends on the strength of the case. And because of the time that had passed and witnesses that had died, our case wasn't going to be great in trial. But, you know, we were able to provide the answers that Sharon and the family wanted. And they wound up pleading on manslaughter. Okay. And again, she's telling us and the family the faults of the case. But then she's going into the defense room and talking to the defendants like, you both put yourselves there. What do you think a jury's going to do? Do you think they honestly care who hit him over the head? You both went in there to steal, so you could both get life, or you could walk. I don't know. You know, here's some middle ground that I think that we can all work with. So it was really a fascinating process.
Yeah, I think the best part is having the victim's family participate.
Yes.
Procedural justice is the term for that nowadays.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, is that's the whole idea, is clarity and transparency in what the process is. Instead of them, God forbid, reading the paper one morning and seeing a plea bargain was made on their father.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's probably happened in the past.
Now, Sharon know? Did she know these people?
Oh, yeah.
She knew them personally.
Yeah, and she knew, she was one of the ones early on that knew more than likely that Rachel and Edward did it. And that was so frustrating for her, thinking that Dave and Chris weren't working hard. But here's the case file. It's 300 pages long. They busted their asses on it. And again, they got to the edge, and then Dave had to leave the unit. Chris got pulled, you know, so who's going to pick it up? Everybody else has a full caseload. And even if we didn't have a cold case unit, if a call had come in on an old case, somebody would have been assigned to track it down.
Yeah, that's important to realize, too, is they don't get put in a vault and never seen again. They're always accessible. And you know, I've said it before, too, is that sometimes time does get on your side, as the Rolling Stone said.
Yeah.
Time's on your side. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
But in the lack of having workability in that moment to actually push the train forward, just like you have the penalty you pay with witnesses dying.
Mm-hmm.
People's memories change, or they relax a little bit. Time can be a benefit too.
Yeah, and again, it's like of the cold cases I worked or solved, everybody's like, "Oh, I bet DNA really solved that." And I was like, "Nah, it was a ticked off ex-girlfriend."
Yeah,
you know, it's relationships break, and with that, the loyalty to that person goes away, and especially in a situation like this, where it'd be different if she wasn't there and he told her, she's not in any trouble. But she knew she was there, so she kind of had, it's like, I'm not going down for this all by myself.
Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Yeah.
And I think all of us have laid down more than one case where that happened.
Absolutely.
It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing.
So how much time did they end up doing?
Or 10 years.
10 years?
They both took 10 years.
And they'll have to serve all 10?
Well, 85%.
Well,
even it's man one.
Man one, yeah maybe.
Man two is 20%. So, but yeah, I believe it's 10 years. So I think, they'll do 8.5 years.
Mm-hmm. But these days, that was probably a, not that we like science, I don't put math to it, but these days maybe that's not a raw deal. I mean, because juries can shock the shit out of you too.
Yeah, well, I think we talked about on Schumacher how I was floored on that one.
Yeah.
They came back with a man one or a man two, and he'd been stabbed over 100 times.
There we go.
Yeah, I'm like, how is that self-defense when you don't have any wounds on yourself except slices on your palm where, you know, your hand slid down on the knife blade?
Mm-hmm.
And as just, I've always said I have a great respect for jurors, but on that one, they just got it wrong.
Yeah, that happens every now and then. Fortunately, it's infrequent, I think.
But you're right. It is getting tougher to get harsher sentences.
Right, yeah.
It really is. Like, heck, you're getting more time for, you know, like drug charges than you are a typical murder and a lot of the murders do. It does boil down to a self-defense type situation. You know, you've got maybe two gang members, you know, going back and forth at it. And it's like, he said he was going to kill me. I saw him out on the street. He put his hand behind his back. I pulled out my gun and shot him. You know, there's some reasonable thought there that, you know, this guy said he was going to kill me. I know he has a gun and he just put his hand, you know, where I can't see it. Do I wait for him to shoot me? And so there is, you know, I do get that street mentality.
Well, in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, the standard ground and castle doctrines are very strong in this state. I don't know what some of the listener states are in Kentucky. It's a crime for the police to list you as a suspect.
Yes.
If there's an articulable self-defense, is that you can actually have a misdemeanor if you commit that by putting them and accuse them in your
absolutely
articulable reason to believe that was a self-defense.
Yeah, and we'll, you know, and James Curlis taught me a lot about that. We handled that basically by, if we thought it wasn't truly self-defense or there was some shaky ground to it, we just take it to the grand jury.
Exactly.
And let, you know, 12 citizens of this city decide, no, I think he was in the right. Okay, city's spoken.
Which is how your community ought to be represented in the justice system anyway, which is a beautiful thing. So I think that's the appropriate use of a grand jury for sure.
But that mediation was, and I had it again not too long ago on a shaken baby case, a cold case, and it worked out. That guy wound up getting taken 29 years.
Yeah.
But he's kind of dead to rights, and he had some PFO stuff, so that's what really jacked it up to 29, but
persistent felony offender.
Yeah, sorry, yeah. I keep forgetting that everybody understands our lingo, Dave.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's why we have Wendy here to.
And
to
I'm
check
a,
us.
I don't know if
I knew what he was saying.
Yeah, because you've been around too long too.
It. I was just like, huh? What do you do before then? Is what I was wondering.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't know if I'd be crazy about mediation on a fresher case, maybe, you know, because. But I do think it's a good way, especially my big thing is the victim's family is represented. Mm-hmm. And what a great judge to slow down and talk. And that's that common sense we all wish. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what victims' families are craving.
Yeah.
Is that's the information they want. Just make some sense of this.
The Commonwealth does a really good job with their victims' advocate keeping families up to date on the status of their cases and how it's traveling through the court system. So they do a fantastic job with that. But it's at the finish line. They can be completely sane and supportive. And then they're like, what? Only 15 years?
Yeah.
You know, and I get where they're coming from. And, you know, they just don't have the knowledge that I might have or the prosecutors about the court system and how it can go sideways real quick with a jury.
I've always left just so much room for them because they're in a place that I hope I live every day of my life to the last without having to deal with what they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
I never want to be in that box that they're in.
Yeah.
And so I think we were all that way. That's why if they got mad at me, I was fine with that.
Sure. Have to let them vent.
Yeah. And to let them, I mean, geez, oh, Pete, that is the worst thing that's going to happen in their life, mm-hmm. period, end of story.
Yeah.
And so, I can understand that frustration completely.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like you said, with that one jury thing in Schumacher, sometimes it is just wrong.
Yeah.
You know? I think we were always fortunate where we were at with the prosecutor's office that we had was, I'd stack it up against anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do look across the country and watch other places where I think things are dealt out very meekly. And there's a case on the West Coast right now, and I can't remember the name of the victim, but it's in an uproar right now because evidently there were witnesses to a murder and everything. And now the prosecutor's saying, well, the police didn't do it in our job. And the police were like, we took the case.
Yeah.
And they said, we're just not going to do it. And now,
who's
missing?
Yeah.
Is the victim's family.
Yeah.
Is watching this thing that's probably turning very political in front of them. So.
And that was a wonderful thing about Ray Larson, rest his soul. He was never afraid to go to trial.
Oh, Lord, no.
No,
yeah.
He's like, I believe in this case, we're going to go. And he'd tell the victims, he's like, we may not win, but we're going to take our swing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, and especially if they were, you know, everybody says this, I want my day in trial until you see the suspect walk out of the courtroom.
Yeah.
That's what you think. And Ray would tell him, like, there's a chance, you know, but if you want us to go in, we'll go in with both fists up.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't, and same with Luann. And I know Kim Henderson is the same.
And you know what? Just to make sure that we're clear on this. you're not bringing them crap either, though. This is not a reckless thing. You just, like it was with Ray and all of them, it had to meet what they thought was there, but then they had the reality. But that's not saying they would ever take a flimsy case or something that's weak and swing the bat. They would never do
that. Well, that's where you have to have that great relationship, especially with the homicide unit and the Commonwealth, because we could take a crappy case and it's like, well, it's your problem now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually become a problem here, but it's now getting remedied in the homicide unit.
I may or may not have worked for a lieutenant years ago that actually dumped one in Ray's lap that way one time.
Just cared about a clearance.
Oh, yeah. And I'll never forget that we went in and had the meeting, and I presented. It was a circumstantial thing with an arson and a death. And I remember Ray looked at me, and this was the neatest thing. Ray'd look at you. He'd listen. He goes, "Davey, do you think this kid lit this fire that—" And I said, "Kid, young man, lit this fire that killed this guy?" And I said, "Absolutely." And he goes, "We're on."
Yeah.
And I swear, I'm just going to say, I'll just say it. The lieutenant at the time looks over and goes, "Basically, what we're saying is that David's brought it over to you, and it's just yours to fuck up now."
Yeah.
And Ray looked at me, sir, and he goes, "Would you, David, leave and close the door on your way out?" And what I heard coming out of the other side of that door was almost, it was profound.
Yeah.
Somebody got taken to the woodshed.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. But it's funny. I think Ray stole that line from him because he used that on me before I go testify. It's like, "Well, now it's on you, Junior. Don't fuck it up."
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Thanks for the vote of confidence right before I go on the stand for five hours.
But he would never, ever take any of your work. That's what I loved about that man. He would never take your work if he didn't believe it.
Yeah.
Never.
And that's, you have to have that. And I always did as a detective, like, I'll take over a circumstantial case. And it's like, I believe this is what happened, but we don't have DNA. We don't have video or whatnot. And I'd sit with Andrea or Kim or whoever. And they're like, "No, I see what you're saying." It's like, I'm on board because I want to be a complete team because I don't want to hand them crap that they didn't want and we lose. And they're like, "Way to go, idiot."
Oh, yeah.
So at least if you got that approval, you were in it together.
Right.
You know, we're all invested in this and we're going to do our best. We understand it's circumstantial, you know, and more times than not, they went down, you know, because the Commonwealth was fantastic at presenting cases. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I always wanted that approval just for on down the road. If things went sideways, they could never point the finger at me. It's like, you know, "You lone wolf did this." But yeah, I just wanted to make sure it was a team effort.
Oh, yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, Luanna Redcorn, who just left the Office of Commonwealth Attorney, is I'm trying to schedule her to come in and talk about what that's like to do that job.
Oh, sure.
And to be the first female Commonwealth Attorney in Fayette County, maybe for a lot of region of the state.
Yeah.
And to talk about these same dynamics we're talking about in casework and things like that. So that'll be a good one.
Oh,
too.
Yeah. No, she'd be
I'm also
guest.
Interested at some point in bringing some victims' advocates in and let
they deal,
know.
Bless their heart with what they have to. I mean, they're the ones that get the call. You know, that family's had enough that day for whatever reason. They had a horrible day and they're dealt with dealing with them on the phone and talking them off the ledge. And a lot of times, you know, they're irrational, but I can get where they're coming from.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, so, you know, that bless those victims advocates for what they have to deal with and, you know, keeping that person on board and explaining things again and again and again. It's I would imagine an exhausting job.
Absolutely. Anything you've got on Charlie Sowers? Remaining questions.
Well, was his daughter satisfied with the sentence they got?
She understood it. She wasn't happy.
Sure.
And I get it because they did deserve more time.
Yes.
But I think it was the right decision. The judge and the prosecutor, Jenna McNeil, did a great job of explaining the process and a potential outcome. And reminded her of her original conversation with me. It's like, I just want answers. I don't want their life ruined. So we're actually able to remind her of her own thoughts originally when I reopened the case. So she relented. It's like, "No, you did say that. And I agreed." And it's like, and that's where we are right now. And I know it's not what you want. I know it's not what they deserve. But I think this is the best outcome we can get. And she understood it.
I think it would be frustrating if I were her. That she knew all along.
Sure.
Like, she just knew who did it.
And well, Dave and Chris knew.
Proven.
You know, they knew. But again, it's that what you know and what you can prove.
That's right.
There's a mile in between that.
Well, and I think also that's mighty big of her to say she doesn't want the rest of their lives ruined. Because if that were my father,
sure.
I would say, I hope they never see the light of day again. So that was mighty big of her.
If somebody did that to somebody in my family, I'll just tell you, I'd bail them out.
Yeah.
Low bond and
hunt them down.
Yeah. We won't have a trial.
Yeah.
So,
and Dave could get away with it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and if it got tight, they'd assign it to Billy Richmond and escape. I'd be okay.
Poor Billy.
Oh, Billy's given out more than he's caught. Oh, he was Billy was brutal himself. So yeah,
exactly.
I love that we can bash on him. He's not even here to defend himself.
Oh, exactly. We got to make sure.
I think Don Evans, he from the stories I was hearing, he probably took his share of bashings from Billy.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So. Well, it's interesting because I had a great run of like 20 years with great people, and you had a really good unit too.
Yeah, it was a blast.
You know, it's some really sharp guys, and
it
everybody
was all learning. Everything, every day you learned.
I mean,
every day you learned.
No, it's a part of me really misses it, but I think what I really miss was gone several years ago.
Yeah,
that camaraderie, like my team dissolved. Like I looked up one day, it's like, wow, I'm the last one. And nothing against the new guys that came in, but we didn't have those shared experiences, you know, and I'm almost a generation older than some of those new guys, you know, and it's like they'd start making jokes about me being old. I'm like, wait, I used to do that to Schoon. When did I become the old man?
Yeah, exactly. Now you're the old dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're leaving depends on your desk and stuff like that. Yeah, but I'll tell you, the itch is always there because we've done some unsolves and we're aware of some other unsolves. And there's a part of you when you listen that my mind starts registering just like a machine. On what would I do with this? What about this? And you start, and there's a piece of you that damn near puts a key in the car.
Yeah.
And goes out and starts knocking on doors. And then you realize you don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, Chris and I still have two that we're working with the homicide unit right now. One that I picked up, I think you were the one.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Close on that, and we're close on another. So we're talking with the homicide unit and the Commonwealth. There are some evidence issues that we need to figure out, but I think these two are two that will go down eventually. And
I'd love to see.
Yeah, it won't be us. I think Travis Holt, if they allow him time, is working cold cases, but they're so busy right now. I think for the last 3 years, we've had a new record of murders in Lexington. Like we keep breaking it every year.
And a huge turnover constantly.
Yes.
Of people.
Yeah, and that's again, we talked about it. 5 years, you're just like really starting to feel confident about, you know, your abilities as a homicide detective.
Well, you know, I retired 3 years ago, just to date stamp this a little bit, and my last command was special investigations. And when I'm out working across the country, as I always brag legitimately, that in that command, I had two shifts of narcotics detectives. Those were the most senior investigators in the police department, period, end of story.
Yes.
And I was blessed to have that. Because what I was seeing happen over in general investigations was that huge turnover. And I felt so lucky to have all that
I'm guessing hair. Matt Evans, Jerry Kurtzinger.
There we go. Yeah, exactly. And just a latchkey. I mean, they were so good, you felt like the Maytag repairman as the commander. Mm-hmm. I mean, just get them a new water fountain was the best thing I could get them. You know?
No, I was always amazed at the high level work that Matt and Jared did, you know, not just busting street corners. I'm talking cartel bus.
Exactly. And how that tied into murder investigations.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because there's
well, I think, did you have Bill and Steve on about the Blue Sky Parkway?
That one, I think, is, I've talked to Matt about it. I think we're going to try to work that out.
That would be a fantastic one.
Yeah.
Because that was one of the few murders that I am aware of that actually went federal.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and that was due to the crossing state lines with cocaine and international travel. And
yeah,
it was a fascinating case. Bill and Steve did exhaustive work on that.
Yeah, I think that Matt's agreed, there'll be a couple of issues we'll have to sidestep on, like a lot of cases.
So. Yeah, and so I got one of my best compliments ever. It's like somebody was talking about, it's like, we can't decide if you're the Matt Evans of homicide or he's the Rob Wilson of narcotics.
Oh,
I was like, thank you very much.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
I think the world of the work that Matt's done, it's just, I'll read in the paper because narcotics and homicide aren't even in the same building.
Right.
We don't talk all that much, but I'll hear something. I was like, how the hell did we get that many kilos in Matt Evans? Like, of course.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, if we're there, if you want to bow us out.
Well, Rob, thank you for sharing this very interesting case. Great job on solving it after more than a decade.
It really goes to Chris and Dave at the beginning. They laid the groundwork. Like I said, I showed you the work. You know, they have 400 pages. I have 35. So, they figured it out, but time was on my side, like Dave said. So, yeah, all the credits to them.
Well, and ultimately, I think it comes back to what you said, teamwork.
Yeah. And it's, yeah, one thing we've learned about cold cases is, and again, I was thankful for being there at the scene, even though I wasn't a primary. I picked up knowledge. I listened to Dave.
You still had knowledge of it.
Because it's so difficult picking up a case you know nothing about.
Right.
A cold case. I mean, there's so many questions that aren't in here, and they may not be relevant, but you don't know until you go back and figure it out. It's like, oh, and you spent 10 days, 2 weeks finding that answer. It's like, oh, this was crap. And the original detective probably knew it, but knew it not to be important enough to put it in the case file.
Yes.
Right.
So you have to do a lot of rework that runs into dead ends on ones you don't know about. But on this one, I had an elementary knowledge of the case, and that really helped get it going.
Goes to show you that's why it's important to have that teamwork. And, you know, sitting in that bay, like you said, with everyone together, you at least picked up on some things that maybe otherwise you wouldn't have known or wouldn't have been in the case files.
So. Absolutely.
Well, thank you again for coming to join us. And we can't wait to have you back on your next one.
Looking forward to it always.
Yeah. Thanks again. It's always fun to reminisce on some of that stuff. I hope the audience doesn't get too bored with that, but it's just, but it is fun. And, but I think most of our listeners, like I said before, that's what they're interested in is what that's really like to work with.
People. The everyday life.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, it is. It's and that was a good thing about my units. Like, we knew when it was time to work hard.
Right.
And we knew when it was time to play hard.
Sure,
you
know? Sure.
And you have to have that balance. And everybody was on the same page. And you work 3 days straight and there's not a joke told, mm-hmm. you know. And then you can take a breath and have some fun.
Exactly. Well, again, thank you a bunch.
Absolutely.
Good deal. The Murder Police Podcast is hosted by Wendy and David Lyons and was created to honor the lives of crime victims, so their names are never forgotten. It is produced, recorded, and edited by David Lyons. The Murder Police Podcast can be found on your favorite Apple or Android podcast platform, as well as at murderpolicepodcast.com, where you will find show notes, transcripts, information about our presenters, and a link to the official Murder Police Podcast merch store, where you can purchase a huge variety of Murder Police podcast swag. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, which is closed caption for those that are hearing impaired. Just search for the Murder Police Podcast and you will find us. If you have enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe for more and give us 5 stars and a written review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts. Make sure you set your player to automatically download new episodes so you get the new ones as soon as they drop. And please tell your friends.
Lock it down, Judy.